Hi everyone, welcome back to the Howarth Timber and Building Supplies 1840 podcast. I'm your host, Paul Bullivant. Today's episode is the first in a series of what we're going to call a day in the life of episodes. And in these episodes, what we're going to do is we're going to pick a role from the company that you find in Howarth Timber or you find in other builders merchants. And then we're going to invite a couple of people who do those roles onto the podcast so they can tell us all about the roles, what they do, some of the highs and lows and some of the journeys they've been on to taking those roles on board. So today we're going to start off by bringing focus to the role of regional manager, and I've great pleasure in introducing Cameron Reed and Rob Bailey, who are our two newest regional managers, having been promoted to the role back in June. Yep. So welcome to you both.
Thanks for having
Thank you.
Shall we start by just getting you both to introduce yourselves?
Yeah.
A bit about yourselves personally, your journey in builders merchanting, and how you've ended up being a regional manager.
I'll go first. So I've been with Howarth 13 years now, yeah. So I started on the graduate management trainee scheme, which was a tough gig, I'll be honest. It was a bit, I was questioning myself a few times. But that was good. Started off at Oldham. Worked there for a couple of years and then moved to the Manchester branch where I was manager there for about 18 months. And then got an opportunity to go to Bury where I was ever since until June of this year, until I got promoted, yeah.
What originally then got you to apply for the...
I didn't apply for it, to be fair. A headhunter rang me through a graduate recruiter firm, so I kind of fell into the industry. I didn't have a clue about building materials.
So straight from uni?
I was working in a warehouse at the time where, yeah, my mum got me a job in a warehouse after uni, said, you're not just sitting around doing nothing, you've got to come and work for me in the warehouse. She works in accounts, so I worked there, and then I got my CV out on a couple of graduate places, and I got a random phone call saying, yeah, do you want to come down to Cheltenham, it was, to get on with the graduates, to the graduate recruiter, to get onto their kind of database. Okay. And then they contacted me about this one, yeah. So yeah, I didn't have a clue. I couldn't tell you what a piece of 3x2 was, which I'm sure...
Still can't, can you?
Some people probably still agree with, yeah, some customers, so...
What did you do at uni?
Geography. So I managed to get found my way, yeah, so yeah, that's fine. Money well spent, really, yeah.
Okay. Rob?
Yeah, so I started for the company in 2002, so I'm in my 23rd year now. I think 23rd year. So I started off working in the yard at Bury under Paul Barton. I worked past my class 2 HGV test. I did a bit of driving. Then I got an opportunity to move inside, did a bit of shop management. Then there was the assistant manager, did a bit of repping as well. And then got an opportunity in 2010 to go to Ashton branch. Went there as branch manager, managed there for, just short of 14 years. And then obviously got my promotion in June as regional manager for the Greater Manchester region.
That's good. Why did... So that story that you both told of kind of stumbling a bit into builders merchanting is exactly the same as my story. Kind of your mum triggered you off. It was my dad who triggered me into it. Why do you think people stumble into builders merchanting rather than pick it?
I think unless you're in and amongst it, in terms of like parents are a tradesperson, you kind of... It's a bit of an overlooked market, really, but it's very... It's obviously a really diverse market and industry, I should say, not market.
Certainly unique.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, every day is different.
Yeah.
And you look at people, especially in our company and, in the wider areas, people, once they're in it, they kind of stay in it for a significant period of time.
Did you have a career that you were thinking of when you did geography at uni?
Not particularly, no. I mean, I was interested in kind of planning and things like that. But yeah, I didn't see myself working for a builder's merchant selling building materials. But everything happens for a reason, doesn't it?
Yeah, so, it does, yeah.
Yeah.
What about you? I wanted to be a chef when I left school.
Did you?
Yeah. I wanted to be a chef, yeah. I started catering college, I think I did about a week, and I thought I was going to be cooking every day, and I never even seen a kitchen. It was just a classroom, and I thought, this isn't really for me. So I started working in a factory did about 4 or 5 years there, and then at weekends I was working with a mate who was a sort of jobbing builder, window fitter, kitchen fitter, and I used to help him at weekends, and he used to go into Howarth Timber in Bury to get his materials, and I went in with him, and I knew the guy that used to work behind who was a shop manager at the time, he used to work at the same factory as me, so we knew each other, and he just rang me up one day and said, are you looking for a job, and I went down for an interview and started the following week in the yard.
Interesting. Yeah. What was the interest in being a chef right at the very start then?
I don't know. I think I just wanted a skill. I think I wanted a trade. I didn't really know. I was so naive when I was young. When I was 16, 17, I was so naive. I didn't even know what careers there were. I just figured that you left school, got a job in a factory, and that's what you did because, right. That's what my dad did.
Yeah.
So I just assumed that's what you did. So I didn't really know what a career path was, never mind what I wanted to do. I was quite lucky that when I'd left school and started working for the factory that I worked at, it was a particularly poor place to work with no prospects or career aspirations. And then when I started working for Hatworth, working for Paul, I realised that there was potential for you to move up the ladder because I'd seen other people in the branch move on to different roles.
How far was that in? Because one of the questions was going to be, at what point did you realise this was the career for you?
Probably pretty early on because within a matter of me starting at the branch, within a matter of months, they'd started to put me through my heavy goods licence, which was not cheap then. It was probably about £1,000 back then. And so I could see that they were prepared to invest in me and that there was opportunities. So I thought, I'm looking for a decent company. And Paul, my boss, was great.
Yep.
And I'd never had a good boss before. The bosses I'd had in the past were awful. And Paul, although he was strict, he was fair and he was good, and I just thought, I can work for this guy.
I think if you look at a lot of people in the company, a lot of people work that way, work the way up, and it's important that we continue to do so. You've had a lot of success with it, haven't you?
Yeah. We've quite a few managers in my region that have worked for me before they went into management, and I'm dead proud of that. It's probably my proudest thing that I've got in my career.
We just recorded an episode with Nick Howarth, and one of the things that he said in that was the importance of working your way through and understanding all the roles and taking time to learn what you do.
Yeah.
So when did you decide it's my career?
I think when I started moving up through the ladder, obviously I was working account sales, getting involved in the sales side of it, and I enjoyed that. I worked under Jeff Coslett at the time, and he kind of took me to one side and he kind of outlined how what plans he had for me and started to give me more kind of things to get my teeth stuck into. So once I could see how diverse it was and I started to enjoy it a lot more and opportunities opened up. And to be fair, he took a big chance on me when I went to the Manchester branch. I was only 24, I think. And I remember my first week there was a bit of an eye-opener. I really enjoyed it every day. As I say, every day is completely different. And some of the things we get involved in as well, some of the projects we get involved in.
Yeah, it's never a dull moment, is it?
No, it's definitely not.
So how long had you been a branch manager, Rob?
I started on the 24th of April 2010 at Ashton.
You've done 14 years.
Yeah.
Cam?
I've been with the company 13, so I've been manager for about 11 and a half.
Okay. Yeah. So the vacancy that came up that eventually led to you to getting the roles came out of the blue, really, to us all, didn't it? It wasn't something that we saw coming.
The current role, you mean, yeah.
Yeah, your roles now. So Ian Williams deciding
it was a surprise to everybody, I think. Yeah. Nick included, finish. Yeah.
How were you feeling at that point, having been in a role for 14 years and 8, 9 years, whatever you said? How were you feeling in those roles?
I think I was ready for. I was definitely ready for something else. Don't get me wrong, if I wasn't successful in getting this role, I'd have still been at Bury and performing at Bury and doing what I needed to do. But I think I'd been through this process 6, 7 years ago prior to yourself and Ian and Jack coming to the company, and it was too early for me then. I think I performed well in the process, but it was well way too early for me to move into regional management. Yep. But having had a bit of a taste of it, not a taste of it, but been through that and kind of been disappointed, I knew that once Ian told me the news that was all in my head, that was just in my mind, then this is what I wanted to do. But yeah, it kind of dragged on for a bit, didn't it? Mm. It was probably 2 or 3 months, not dragged on, but 2 or 3 months.
Time, didn't it?
Yeah, it took a lot of time, a lot of organising, the right decision had to be made, and it was quite difficult to keep focused then, I'll be quite honest.
How were you feeling, Rob?
It was a bit different.
Having done
for me,
the years of management and
I think I was the last person to actually apply for the job. I think there was 10 applicants, and I think I was the last person to apply. But I was so torn whether it was because I didn't go for it the first time round when Cameron went for it, and I was really torn with it. Do I want to do this? Is it? Do I feel as though I have to do it or I should do it? People are expecting me to do it. But then once I'd applied, I felt comfortable then. And when I got to the assessment day, I thought, I can do this.
Yeah.
And it felt good. I think, obviously, with me working at the Ashton branch for such a long time, it was difficult. I found that transition really difficult to move away from the branch and watch somebody else run it. And I'm still struggling with that now, to be honest. I'm totally honest with you.
Yeah.
Because, it couldn't be a further removed role from what we do now to what we're doing 6 months ago.
Yeah.
It's completely different.
I get the challenge of stepping away, having put your heart and soul into something.
Oh, yeah.
And then watching somebody else doing it. How have you overcome that?
I think what I've said to myself is that when I moved from Bury to Ashton in 2010, that was completely different as well, because Bury was a traditional merchant when I was there, and I'd been there for a few years and everything was going well. And when I got to Ashton, it was going through a really difficult time, and it was making a transition from being a sort of like more of a manufacturing branch than a proper merchant. And it was about halfway through that. It'd been through a wave of redundancies the year before I got there, and it was in a difficult place. So when I got to Ashton, I can remember ringing Jeff, my old boss, up and saying, oh, God, I don't know what I've done here, because I found the team really difficult to sort of work with. And it took me probably a year to get comfortable there. So what I've said to myself is that this role won't be any different. It's probably going to take us both about a year to get used to doing this, and maybe even a bit longer, because it's such a change. So I'm just kind of rolling with the punches, expecting that you're going to miss certain aspects of the management of a branch, and some that you won't.
Yeah.
There's definitely a few that I don't miss.
Right, come on, we can't stop there. Now you're on. What don't you miss? Don't name names.
I think daily drama.
Yeah,
you know, I think obviously you still get drama. I mean,
don't you get eight times the amount because now you're looking after eight branches?
I'm quite fortunate, me, that a lot of the managers in my region are pretty experienced guys.
Same
so
as me,
they don't really need
to, if, so they filter.
If they ring me, I know it's something that they really need to. So they'll deal with a lot of stuff that I don't need to get involved with. Whereas when you're in a branch, you're the person
you're the front.
That everybody goes to for everything, every problem, every, you know,
customs
a bit of
staff.
Assurance that they need to rubber stamp what they're doing. Yeah. You're the person they go to. And although at the time you hate it, when all of a sudden you're not in that, you do miss it a little bit.
You do,
It's quite a long job.
Yeah.
It is quite a long job, I'll be honest. But
do you are you finding it difficult to let go?
No, not as much as such. Obviously, I still look at Bury and the performance of it on a regular basis, but it's not one of my branches that I look after now. So I've had a real kind of clean break from it. And I've been quite fortunate in my region, because I travel a bit further afield than Rob does. There's managers that now I work alongside or work with who I've got to know a lot better than I previously did, and there's some real, real good people. And that's been not difficult. It was quite daunting at times, really. Whereas, I think, Rob, you forgive me if I'm wrong, but you knew a lot more of yours in more depth than I did.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've worked at four other branches.
Yeah, so you're there. What don't you miss? So it's the same question as Robert.
Same dramas, customers, sometimes.
You
no offence to them.
I know, I can't say that.
No,
Dave,
the customers are brilliant, but you know what I mean? You're the best mate 1 minute, and you bend over backwards 99 times, and then one minor thing goes wrong, but it's a major thing in their eyes, and you're every name under the sun, and this and that. And But then you kind of do miss that as well, because that gives you a bit of a buzz when you do get things right. And
I think the one frustration is when you as a branch manager is you're trying to be organised in the world's most unorganised industry. And that's just the truth. And so every day you'd come in with a plan.
Out the window by half,
you'd have your day book written out with what you're going to do. And like you say, by 8:30 in the morning, that's just completely out the window. And you're just reacting, putting fires out. And I did enjoy that, because I was good at it. I was really good at that. Or I felt as though I was really good at it. And it's just, it's the same sort of thing now.
Why is the industry so chaotic? Because I have to be honest, right? I'm 56 and I started at 18. That's all I've ever done, builders, mate. So I've worked in it 38 years and nothing's changed.
No.
It's as chaotic now as it was back then. Why?
I think it's because there's so many people relying on people before them. Because you've got four or five different trades on a site, plus you've got the homeowner or the end user, whatever you want to call them. And if they change their mind, it changes everybody's plans. And then, the job might go quicker than they were expecting. So then they need stuff, and it's always your fault. A lot of the jobs that we supply, the customers, if they're honest, they don't know what they're going to need or what they're going to do until they start putting a shovel in the ground. And so we've then got to react to that. And then our suppliers have got to react to it, our staff have got to react to it. And that's the fun.
The pressure is the fun. Yeah, I agree. It is part of the fun.
I think that chaos is the only reason why the builders merchants industry is still going strong after all these years, because we're happy to operate in that grey, murky, messy areas.
Where you're never going to get an Amazon or someone being able to do what we do.
No.
It's never going to be able to.
No.
You're never going to get that kind of big company taking over the market because it's just not possible.
Yeah. And the best merchants are the ones that are prepared to be reactive. The ones that are rigid who just say, well, no, that's what we've said we're going to do and that's what we're going to do, they'll just fail and crash because you can't be like that in this industry. You just can't. You've got to accept that plans will change on an hourly basis. Yeah. And if you're prepared to react to it and work with it, you'll be successful.
Yeah. I think that's where, going back to Ashton and Berry, where we both come from, I think we were both very customer focused, customer service focused, and you would jump through hoops when you knew you needed to do so.
100%.
I think that was a big part of our success.
How have your mindsets had to change from being a branch manager to being a regional manager? Because in essence, they're the same. It's managing people, it's sorting things out, it's dealing with problems, it's planning, it's reacting. But they're very different roles. So how have your mindsets had to change?
Knowing that you can't do it all yourself. Not that you could do as a branch manager, obviously, you had your branch team, but it's just managing, obviously, that next level up.
Yeah.
And just trying to manage through your managers as such. I think early days we probably were trying to do too much ourselves.
Yeah.
Things that we probably wouldn't be expected to do as a regional. But that's kind of you just kind of default to what you know, don't you? And just maybe just getting to know, your branches and the staff and how they run and just making tweaks here and there. And, nobody's got the magic wand or the correct answers, but using our previous experiences and trying to push a bit of knowledge on, a bit of expertise on.
Yeah. I think for me, it's like, if I'm totally honest with myself, when I was the manager at Ashton, I was really, really selfish towards that branch. And it sounds crazy because we've got, 35, 36 branches now, whatever we've got now. And I didn't give a monkey's about the other 35. All I focused on was if Ashton performed and if Ashton made money, I was doing all right and I was good at my job. And it's crazy, really, because you think we're a relatively small business and we should really be looking at, all the branches. Yeah. Whereas now, if I'm honest, in the first couple of months of starting this job, I still only focused on Ashton. So when I looked at the league table or if I looked at the P&Ls, I'd look at Ashton first and then thought, there's another seven here that I've got to kind of look at.
We're feeling guilty.
Yeah.
Did others know that you were, always got your eye on?
Tom did.
And all the really good managers, if they're totally honest, they're the same. They only care about their own branch and that's because that's what they live and die by.
Yeah.
Whereas it's really different now thinking that, we need not just my eight branches or my region's eight branches, but also his and the southern ones and the eastern ones, because the top and bottom of it is we need the company to all perform well. So I'm as invested in York branch doing well or Tottenham doing well or as much as I am for the eight. So it's just really thinking about the wider company, whereas before you become really, really insular in your own branch.
Yeah, you don't really think
on a daily basis about anybody else.
That one branch on the league table and your P&L, that's all you're... Yeah.
But what you're describing there is that classic, a good team is made up of good individuals, isn't it?
Yeah.
So if all of your managers are performing at their highest levels, which they have to do to focus on it, your then job is to mould them together into a team.
I think we're getting better at the collaboration.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
How's that going down in the region? So prior to you two taking over, there was Ian Williams who looked after the 16 branches, the Northwest, and now we've split it into.
We still
is
keep
it eight
it,
each.
Seven? Yeah, we still keep. Obviously, we're running with two separate people, so we run day to day differently. We speak to each other numerous times a day and run things through each other, but we still keep the 16 together. For instance, tomorrow we're having a 16 Christmas day out. Okay,
yeah.
Still run meetings together because it worked. For the last 7 years, people enjoyed the feedback I got from some of my branches was they wanted to keep it that way because they. We had a good team spirit. We
And it's important because there's so much crossover as people. Well. He's got a branch in Sale, and I've got one 5 minutes.
Yeah. We've got one share rep, but we've also got quite a lot of crossover.
So it is important, and I think the best thing for me getting this job was that he got the other job because he since we've known each other, we've always been like close, friends and stuff like that. When we went on conferences, you generally find us together somewhere in a bar. So it was good that we've got each other to bounce off because what Cam said earlier about it being a lonely job, It is a really lonely job.
Yeah.
A lot of the time, you know, you sat there with your own thoughts and thinking what to do and whether you're doing the
right
thing or not.
Or something like that.
So it's great for me to be able to pick the phone up to him and just run things through him and vice versa. And obviously we've got Jack and Aaron as well, you know, yourself, that we can run things by. So, yeah, I think we've got a really good team of people.
So just picking up on that point of you two working so well together, when we did the recruitment panel and we were picking the roles, we really didn't factor in, did the two people we pick gel well together? We just kind of assumed that would be the case. But now you've raised it, it's a really interesting point, because when I joined Haworth, there was myself, there was Ian Williams, and there was Jack. We all joined on like the 2nd of January 2018, and we didn't know each other at all. And we've said all along since then how lucky we were that the three of us naturally gelled. Otherwise, it would have been really painful if there'd been any clash between them. How do you think it would impact how closely you're working if you, one of you, hadn't got the role and it had been somebody from outside of the business? How would that have
an external candidate?
Yeah, so if there'd been one of you and an external candidate who you didn't know,
there'd be probably that element of time where you've got to try and work each other out and try and build that professional relationship, whether the two regions would work as closely as they do, and that 16 would still remain, probably wouldn't be the case. But that's not necessarily a bad thing either, though. You know, I mean, as I say, me and Rob, we do get on very well, but we are both individual people. We've both got individual beliefs and things, ways we do things. But I think naturally you've got to build that business relationship, because that's what's right for the company, isn't it?
How do you, it's a real balance, isn't it, between doing things internally where you know the people and you know and trust them because you've got a working history, and bringing people in from the outside to bring in fresh ideas. So it is a real balance.
Yeah.
How with you two having spent the last 10, 20 years of your life working in Haworth, how do you make sure that you keep your ideas fresh and that you keep learning from outside of Haworth? Because we're a big, small company, or we're a big, medium-sized company, but there's a big, wide world out there with lots of other businesses. How do you try and keep up to date with what's going on?
We're constantly evolving, aren't we, to be fair, and we're always constantly investing. That's the big thing with Haworth. Yeah. We're always, as long as
on a personal level.
On me personally.
How do you make sure you see what's going on in the wider world?
I think it's that personal pride. Continue to want to strive to be the best, and you've got to evolve. You know, if something's not working, then you just change it. You've got to don't just stick with the same kind of routine that you've done. Or we've always done that for the last 8 years, and we've always had an okay result, or we've not had a great result. Yeah. But it's all we've done, and it's all we know. You've just got to have that kind of internal drive to really keep things fresh, haven't you?
Yeah,
yeah. I think I've always known that I don't know everything, and I've always been prepared to listen to people, be it somebody working in the yard or a wagon driver or a regional director. Obviously, when Ian came on board, he came from a national. He brought a lot of change when he first came on board, and some of it worked and some of it didn't work. But I was prepared to go with it. Yeah. I was never one of them that'd sit there and say, well, you know, we've been successful for 10 years while you've not been here, so, you know, just leave it because it's not broke. But also, I've got, you know, quite a few sort of like friends, if you like, colleagues who work outside Haworth Timber, and I'm always prepared to listen to them. Mm. I always find good supplier reps is a good source of information to hear what's going on in the market. So I think it's just being prepared to accept that, one, you don't know everything and you never will do, and two, that your way isn't always the right way.
You're going to make mistakes, though. Yeah. 100% you are.
I mean, we've both said, haven't we, that if you're really passionate about something and we think we know it'll work, then we'll drive it forward, absolutely. But always be prepared to just listen to, you know, a few people. I'm really lucky that the people I'm working with have got a huge amount of experience. You know, like Paul I mentioned before, he's just done his 30th year in the merchants, so what he doesn't know isn't really worth knowing. So I'll always sort of speak to him and just sound him out before I push something through.
Quite a few different managers now who've come from nationals or other merchants as well, so they're a good source to kind of sound out a few ideas and just see if not being too proud to ask.
Yeah.
I think we're also lucky with Nick, really, because Nick is so in touch with the business. You know, you speak to him every other day.
Yeah.
He's always there to sound out for advice on the smallest thing to the biggest thing. So Nick's really kept in touch with it, and that's good for us.
And he's been very supportive. He's been really supportive. Even if he's got concerns with something that we want to maybe implement, he'd run through his concerns. But ultimately, he'd, you know, he said to me on a couple of occasions with a couple of recruitment things, and it's ultimately my decision. Yeah. So
it was interesting interviewing him. He said the two things that link to what we're just talking about now. One, the importance of promoting from within. Mm-hmm. So he takes great pride. And in fact, I asked him the question, what are you most proud of? And his answer was developing people and bringing people through, which is good. But he also talked about building a safe culture where people are prepared to take educated risks and be prepared to fail fast, i.e. if you've got an idea, you go for it.
Yeah.
If it works, great. If it doesn't work, you find out quickly, learn your lesson and move on.
You made a comment a couple of weeks ago, I think you say fail fast.
Yeah.
Whereas if you try it, great, and it works, fantastic. If it doesn't, don't dwell on it. Don't just sit on it and hope it's just going to magically fix itself. Yeah. Just cut your losses and move on and try something else. Yeah. And
it's good. It's good. It's good to work for a business where you're encouraged to take educated risks.
I think that's a big part of our success, really. Yeah.
There's no fear. There's no culture of fear of failure.
No.
Right. So we talked a little bit about your role, about looking after branches, helping and supporting them. But if you were talking to somebody sat in this chair who really didn't have a clue about what a regional manager's role is, particularly today in the difficult economy that we're in, just give me a brief overview of what the role of the regional manager is.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, obviously, supporting your managers. Mm-hmm. You've got, you know, we've both got 8 managers in eight branches, giving them autonomy and freedom to make the calculated risks that you've just been discussing there, backing them with it, feeding the information from the SLT and sending that out in a timely manner so that you're not bombarding them with it, but allowing them to feel comfortable so that they can become entrepreneurial and they're the ones that become successful branches. Yeah. I mean, the top and bottom of it is the role is to make sure that all your branches are profitable.
Yeah.
And that's the crux of it.
Yeah, in simple terms, I suppose.
And each branch, what I've found, is that each branch will have a different problem. So one might be just volume, one might be gross margin, one might be staffing issues, one might be makeup of the site. It's really, it's going in there on a snapshot, looking at the branch, working out what that problem is, and then working with the manager to try and solve
it. Yeah, putting a plan in place to execute.
That's the job. It's in a nutshell.
Every branch is in a different phase. And,
and it's similar to being a branch manager. Yeah. When you was in the branch, you'd have different departments that had different issues, or you had a different member of staff that had different issues, and it's trying to solve them. So it's the same, but just on a wider scale. And and now rather than, you know, something that Nick was concerned when we first came out of branch to do this role is that we would naturally try and become branch managers because that's what we're used to. And so we'd be going into a branch and running it. And obviously that's not the case. So I know he's always saying to us, make sure you're managing through your managers and not trying to manage the branch yourself.
Good. That's good advice. Real good advice, yeah.
Yeah.
Is there anything I think that's a really good summary. Is there anything that's surprised you? First 2 or 3 months.
Just how different branches are, to be fair. I think every single 100% branch is completely different. You could have one next door to each other. I mean, as I say, I've got 8. I mean, I think of certain clusters. So I've got 4 branches within probably 10 miles of each other. And the chalk and cheese, how they run things, how they run the transport, how they run, how the customers, the products they stock, things like that. And it's just, everything is completely different. It's trying to get that kind of standardisation across the board. So obviously hit certain KPIs and performances and things like that, but then also giving them the freedom to run. If it works as it works, don't reinvent the wheel kind of thing. Yeah.
Okay.
But it was quite an eye opener, really.
I mean, I can only echo what he said then. When I assumed that every branch ran the way my branch ran, and it couldn't have been.
Well, that just goes back to your point where you were saying that when you're in and amongst it, that is your only priority. Yeah. The branch that you're in, you're in this little bubble, aren't you? Yeah, you're just in this little bubble.
Going in there thinking, well, why do they do like that?
And I'm sure Daryl, who's gone into Bury to replace me, is probably thinking, why did Cameron do it like this? Yeah. Or, what were we doing here? And
I find it really interesting you saying that, because the branches in your region are all pretty close to each other, aren't they? You could throw a towel over, some of them are that close. So for it to be that kind of surprise, amazed me.
Like I say, what Oldham, Rochdale and Ashton, you could throw a towel over the 3 of them, but they all run completely different.
Yeah.
Everything about, every aspect of from yard to counter to transport, everything's done differently. They've all got their own take on how they do things, and it works for them, and You know, you just got to accept the worst thing I could have done is gone in and say, right, forget all that now. This is how I did it, Ashton, and this is how you're going to do
well,
it now.
That would have gone down well, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it'd have been a disaster. So,
how many times a week do you say that? That's how I did it, Ashton.
Same when I was at Bury.
Yeah, I probably really am guilty of doing that.
I can feel myself doing it. I even apologise to him. Yeah. Right. Sorry, if you say, yeah,
it's impossible, isn't it? Because I think the thing is, you know, you don't want to say it.
Yeah.
But fact of the matter is, you've built your experience by spending that time in Bury in Ashton, and it's absolutely valid to use it, but at the same time you cringe because you think they 100%. Must think.
Well, to be fair, it's the same when Ian first started. He used to go on about TP. We used to sort of say, how many times is he going to mention TP? Because he did. He used to talk about them all the time.
That shows how much people pick up on it though. So what's he saying about us?
You are now that man, aren't you?
Well, that's what he'd done forever. Oh yeah. So
you both got awful timing because obviously you've become a regional manager in the middle of a real downturn, it's a real tough year. You know, all the predictions are it's not going to get much better next year. We've had that budget that suddenly added a huge overhead onto every business in the country with the national insurance changes. What are you focusing on now with your branches?
Probably just getting back to basics, stripping it right back. Yeah. Sales margins, overheads, controlling your overheads. Just really getting back to basic trading. Obviously, we have got some good bits and pieces coming up in the background, you know, in the pipeline in terms of IT and things like that. And they're all important, but I think top and bottom of it is it's just making sure that we're, you know, the sales volumes are where we need them to be at the right margin. And then obviously on the other side, you know, we're controlling the overheads.
I'm assuming it'd be the same for you.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you're in a market like this, literally the only thing that matters is sales.
You've
just got to get as much sales through the door as you possibly can. When I did the assessment day and they said, describe a mix, a good builder's merchants in 100 words, and I was tempted to write the word sales like 100 times or 99 times and then thanks. And that's the truth, is it's all about sales now. We've got to get as much through the door as we can and ride it out, because it's not going to be great for the next 12 months, 18 months or whatever. But when I first became a branch manager, it was a similar time. We'd just come out of recession in 2010. It was still difficult.
Yeah.
There'd been redundancies throughout the industry. I think we'd shed about, 20, 30% of the workforce. That was a really, really difficult time. But if you can dig in when times are tough like this now, you know, you were just talking before about Nick saying that everything's in this industry, it's all cyclical and, you know, it will come round.
Yeah.
If it's not next year, it'll be the year after. And then you're in a good footing then. So it's to keep the right people. To not lose your good staff.
Yeah, protect them.
Yeah, make sure you get as much business through the door as you can at the best margins that you can. One thing that Nick said at conference the other year, he said he doesn't get too excited when things are really good and he doesn't get too down when things are tough, and I think that's really important.
Yeah, I picked up on that. I mean,
you know, it's not our fault that the market's, you know, not where it needs to be at the moment. And
I think you mentioned something a couple of, probably 6 or 7, you know, it was prior to me and Rob doing this role. And I think we were discussing, obviously, the outlook on the economy, and it's, you know, it's going to get a bit tougher. And I think you said, well, if we've nailed, you know, the challenges that we had during COVID, fair enough, obviously that brought different challenges because we had the influx of sales and things like that. But when we had, you know, we had all the HR and the people issues, not issues, they were far from issues, but everybody's heads were all over the place. And we, you know, we look back on that now, and that's what, five years ago?
Yeah.
And it seems forever ago.
Yeah,
but you just knuckled down and you got on with it, and we got through it, didn't we? So it's obviously a different type of stress now that we've got in terms of the economy slowed down. But I think we need to kind of celebrate our wins there and look back and think, well, you know, we managed that, I think, incredibly well as a business.
Yeah.
So we are resilient and we can do it. We've got the expertise to do it. It's just a different problem we've got. Yeah, it's just a different problem now, isn't it? So
yeah.
Okay, so the episode is a day in the life of. So we've talked a lot about your role, and it's probably difficult with you guys to talk about a day in the life within Severin. So I've got a number of questions here I want to ask you that are around what you do on a day-to-day basis and how you do your things. I'm just going to run through those. How much do you plan and how much is reactive in your day and your week?
I always try and have the next 2 weeks outlook calendar set up from, otherwise I kind of get a bit anxious, not anxious about it, but I need to have that. However, there's still going to be a massive amount of flexibility in that. You know, as Rob was saying before about the day-to-day, and as a branch manager, you have, you know, it all goes out the window by half eight. It's not as much in this job, but you do need to be reactive and ready to divert to a different branch if needed to be.
Yeah.
Rob,
Yeah, I'm probably, I plan a week. In the, when I first started this job, I didn't plan the week because I was never used to using an Outlook calendar because I just used to go to my desk and dealt with whatever came through the door. But that's really important for me now is that I have to if I don't plan that week, I can get in my car and feel a little bit aimless and a bit lost.
Mm.
But the really important thing is, and I think we talked about it, is that when I first started doing this, I tried to do too much in a week. I try and do 3 branches in a day, which is, you know, just ridiculous. And they weren't quality time, and I'd be in there and out there and think, right, I've got to get here and I've got to get there. And it's crackers, really, to do that. I try and plan for the next week so that I'm going somewhere. I'll try and do, you know, a branch a day for 4 days, and then generally a Friday I'll either work from home or I'll go to a branch and work in an office, yep, sort of thing.
Just catch up there.
Yeah, and then and so it works nice. So the following week you can do the other branches. But what I found is that, and you know, it's exactly what I was told, is that you've got some branches where I might not need to go for a month.
Yeah.
You know, because they do what they do and they don't really need as much sort of focus from me. And then there's some that I go to every week or maybe even twice a week, and I guess that's just the job.
Yeah.
But if I don't, it's certainly more planned in this role, exactly, okay, more planned. I do a lot more planning than I ever did before.
More structured, but you do have to still have that flexibility.
If you had to put a percentage on it, then how much is... If you take an average week, how much is structured and how much buffer do you leave for all the reactives?
I'd say it's probably 80-20, to be fair.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
About the same.
Yeah.
I generally think I know where I'm going, but if something happens on the way,
then you
can... I probably do a lot more miles than you, but more motorway miles than you. And so when I'm commuting, I do spend even if I'm not at a branch, I'll speak to, you know, there'll be some days where the phone rings non-stop and I'll speak to 7 out of 8 managers, and then other days it might be 1-0, it might be somebody from, you know, the SLT team or whatever. But I think we touch base, I tend to touch base with everybody at least once or twice a week and just a general catch up. There's a lot you can do on your phone these days, stuck in traffic.
Picking up that car thing and the driving thing, and you'll both drive loads more miles than you used to. How's that impact your week?
Well, I must admit, when Ian divvied up the branches, when we got the jobs, Ian took us over to Blackburn and told us which... Well, I think we were both a bit shocked with which branches we got. And I can remember getting in the car thinking, Cam's got a lot more driving to do than I've got. He's like...
Do you go down to Chester?
Well, I'm in Chester. I've been there weekly.
Newcastle.
Yeah, Newcastle. I tend to speak to Colin a lot over the phone, and I try to get down there once a month or so. I mean, Colin runs a real good branch, so, you know, he's a very experienced manager, so there's a lot of trust there with him. Chester, obviously, we've been through the big refurb, so I've been there usually at least once a week, sometimes twice. So there's only been one day, I think it's 3.5 hours back, which was a bit of a killer for an hour journey. But
how are you finding, though, just the time in the car, and how are you finding it in terms of kind of stress levels, and how are you finding it?
Great Spotify playlist.
even impacting things like dieting, because it's not uncommon for people to...
What are you trying to say?
Admiring how skinny you are compared to me.
Winter jacket.
Gilet under my jumper.
I think...
Seriously though, whenever you hear of anybody who's been office internally bound going driving, you'll often hear that I put weight on because I'm not walking around driving.
Sometimes I can
I'm stopping and having a...
Less than 1,000 steps in a day.
It's awful,
in a branch, 10,000 every day, no problem. I'm one of them, Mia. Sometimes... If I'm in the car, I mean, the furthest branch time-wise for me is probably Fallowfield. I mean, you could probably get to Cornwall quicker than Fallowfield some days because it's just a nightmare to get to. So that might be an hour and a half. So I sometimes think to myself, I'll find myself ringing somebody for the sake of ringing somebody because I don't like sitting in the car alone. Yeah, exactly. And that just goes back to the lonely thing.
Listen to some podcasts, mate. That's what you need to start doing.
But then something will happen, the phone will ring, you pick it up, and then you're straight in it then. And you just, driving doesn't bother me.
No.
I mean, what I have found is, though, I am knackered when I get home, because in the past I'd have an half an hour drive home, and that would be good for me because you could, like, you know, relax and breathe and let all the day's crap go out of your head. Yeah. Whereas now I could be in the car for an hour and a half, an hour and 45 minutes, but it doesn't... I am tired, but the actual driving doesn't really bother me. I don't mind it.
How are your bladders? Like, I can't get from Lincoln to Wakefield without...
It's weird. It's almost like range anxiety on your Tesla, isn't it?
Yeah.
So when you're planning your trips, you've got to look at range for the Tesla and where the toilet is.
Where can I charge it?
Where
can I go to the toilet?
To be fair, I mean, there's not that many superchargers about, which I suppose it sounds like a real entitled
thing. That's another complication.
A real entitled thing to say, isn't it?
But I'm a bit lucky with that because I've got... One round the corner at Brighouse, which is not far from where I live, and then there's birch services.
Well, I go to the Trafford Centre a lot, so if Nick's ever looking at my tracker,
you're doing a lot of shopping.
Yeah, you're thinking, geez, he's there again, you know what I mean? So,
so you don't think of all these things when, when you're taking on the job. Where's the toilets? Where's the superchargers?
So, yeah, Trafford Centre, but I usually tend to either work on my phone when I'm at supercharger, or sometimes I get the laptop out, get through a few emails, and then you're not having to do it at home then.
How, like most people nowadays, we do a lot of work on email, like everybody in the world, we're just bogged down with email. The fact that you're spending 2, 3, 4 hours a day driving, how do you manage to balance up the two? Because you can't just... The problem with email is the mix of stuff that you get. Some of it is dead important.
Yeah.
Some of it is just guff.
Yeah.
How do you manage that? Because if you don't keep on top of it, you miss messages, you're not doing the job. It's a real poison challenge.
I tend to try and have a... Every Friday will be... I try and do an office day, or either work from home or an office day. We have the obviously our group SLT call in the morning, and then I try and get through. So I park things up. If I need to park things up and I know I can deal with them on a Friday, then that's when I'll get through that and send my emails out to managers and things, and kind of if there's messages that need to be to sent, that's when I'll do them. But as I say, if I'm charging, I'll tend to get my laptop out, make a few phone calls, work on my phone then. It's just I think my organisational skills have got a lot, well, they've had to get a lot better. Yeah. I mean, I think it was pretty good on the email traffic anyway, but they've had to improve a lot. It's knowing what you can and can't park up. And
That's good. That's a good skill, isn't it, the prioritisation of it.
I mean, the first thing I do when I get up in the morning is I'll turn my laptop on at home and I'll go through that day's emails or the morning's emails before I set out to go to a branch. And you can sort of like look at anything that, you can park that up, or that's just, you know, somebody just needing me to give a thumbs up or whatever, and then the stuff that you've got to deal with. So, I don't struggle with that. I don't.
I think a lot of things, from a branch perspective, if it's really urgent, the managers will ring you.
Yeah.
I think from the leadership team, there's a lot of email traffic, and that's just knowing when, as I say, when you can, what ones you have to respond to pretty quickly, and which ones, you know, you can buy yourself a bit of time. And obviously, you don't really sometimes want to jump in with 2 feet and reply straight away. Anyway, I think some of it needs a lot of thinking.
Is there anything else that I've missed around the day in the life of a regional manager? Any thoughts that you want to add? Or tell me about?
It's good. I mean, it's just a different... I'm just trying to make sure that each branch I go in, I make a point of, you know, getting to know everybody and just building them new relationships. Obviously, we've come from established branches where, you know, I knew 90% of my staff really well, and I knew the kids' names, I knew the wife's name, I knew the dog name, you know, the dog's name, etc. And it's just trying to, I'm not suggesting I get to that level, because I've got a lot more people, you know, 8 branches, we've all got, you know, average of what, 10, 11 people, and so that's 90 people. I'm never going to get to that level, but just trying to build that relationship, make sure you're approachable, because it's, as I say, I mean, I don't want to be, it's not my, you know, I don't think it's my demeanour and my style. I think I'm quite an approachable person, and I want to make sure that people realise that, you know.
Well, it's the people. I know it does sound cliche, but it is the people that deliver everything that we do.
Yeah.
I was listening to a podcast coming over with an interview of Thomas Frank from Brentford.
Yeah.
And they were quizzing him about this image that Brentford have got, that their team is built around data, and they buy people based on data, what have you. And he said, no, you couldn't be further from the truth. We have, everybody has data now, and 95% of the key to success is people. Yeah. Get the right people, the right teams, doing the right things, people engaged, and then you win.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. It's all about the people. Yeah. All it's that the merchant is the people. The reason customers come in, it's nothing to do with the data or anything.
Yeah, we all sell the similar products, behind the counter, similar prices. We've all got similar, you know, delivery fleet and things like that. So it is the people that, you know, it's part of their day, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the USP. It's the change. Anything else from you, Rob, that you...
Yeah, I mean, I think...
About the role.
I spent a lot of time thinking about what I wanted out of my regional manager when I was in a branch, and tried to offer that. And I think it's all just about... It's offering support that'll make the car go faster, basically. Yeah. It's not going in there and, you know, pulling bits of stuff, small stuff that they're going to deal with anyway. It's just, I think... What I've said to everybody when I've gone into the branch is, you know, what do you want out of me? What sort of support do you want out of me? And just trying to help that way. So, yeah, that's about it.
Did you, just thinking about, so Ian did all 16 branches.
Yeah.
You've got 8. What do you reckon's the sweet spot in terms of number of branches? So how many do you think you could do and give the kind of attention that you are giving?
I suppose it all depends
to
on
the 8 now.
Geographical location. I mean, obviously, I've got 8, which keeps me very busy because I've got a bit of mileage to do.
What's your longest drive?
Newcastle, probably. Newcastle or Chester, depending on traffic.
What?
It's a couple of hours, yeah.
Okay.
Which is not, you know, it's not the end of the world, is it? It's not like I'm doing it every day. I think eight's a good. You know, obviously it's my first regional role, so I think if I've had more than eight, it'd be a bit of a struggle. I'm not saying that I'd want eight forever. I think as you develop yourself and you know you get more used to the job and things like that, you probably could take a little bit more on. But like you say, it's finding that sweet spot where you're not neglecting branches and you're not also kind of twiddling your thumbs. Thinking,
you're not suffocating them as well. You know,
they don't need you in there all the time.
I think eight is. It's good.
Yeah.
We've got at the moment, like you say, as you get more experience, you get more comfortable in the job, find your feet in the role, whether you take more on. Obviously, Jack in the East has got...
He's got 16.
Yeah.
I don't envy him on that one.
No. And I suppose it's how much... Because it's not just a case of visiting the branches, it's looking behind the scenes at, like we was discussing before, about what issue is at which branch and how you can help solve it. And it's like trying to spend a bit of time with the sales execs. I know Ian always used to say that he struggled to do that because he had so many branches. He couldn't, you know, go out with the sales execs or just, you know, spending time with the counter staff, that sort of stuff. So I feel comfortable with eight at the moment.
Yeah.
I think any couple of years' time, whether Nick decides to increase that, whether we move things around again, I don't know. But at the moment, yeah, it sits right with me. It does sit right with what we need to do. Yeah.
Right, I'm going to start wrapping things up now with got a series of questions that we're asking everybody who comes on the on the podcast just to get their own personal thoughts on.
Quick drink of water before.
I think you're going to need more than water, Rob. They're questions around what make you and your thoughts on management and leadership and what have you. So the first one: what makes a good leader? And what makes a high-performing team?
A good leader, like I said earlier, is someone who's prepared to listen to other people's opinions, take them on board and decide whether it's the right thing or not, but also have the sort of like gumption to stick to the guns if they know something's right and they're doing it for the right reasons, for the business, not for themselves, their own egos.
Yeah.
And a successful merchant, I know it's a cliche, but just having the right people in the right positions. That's what one of my proudest things when I was at Ashton for that time is that I probably had two or three teams in that time, where people had moved on promotion-wise or they'd left or whatever. And finding someone to replace a key member of staff is probably the hardest thing you'll ever do as a manager because you become reliant on them to do things for you. And then all of a sudden they're not there. It generally falls on you to do them. And you're used to not doing them. So it's definitely looking at succession plans, you know, looking at staff within the branch who you think be able to step up if that person does move on. You can generally get a feel for somebody who's going to move on. And, yeah, that's my proudest part of being a successful branch manager, just developing people, seeing people come through.
So keys to being a good leader and what makes a high-performing team?
It's not the same question. I thought I was going to have it.
The same question.
Yeah, just to echo what Rob was saying, really. I think
that's a good, crap answer.
Let me develop.
Come on, you're your own man.
Yeah, I know.
I see something.
Good listener. I think you've got to be a real good listener and just take things on board and not be too proud to ask for help and put your hand up as well. Obviously, you've got to lead from the front and ultimately it's your decision and you've got to back yourself and be confident if you make a decision and follow it through. But also on the flip side, like we said previously, if it's not working, then you change it, don't you? But just being a leader is just being putting people at ease and, you know, giving them confidence in yourself and following through, doing what you say you'll do.
And a high-performing team, what makes a good one of those?
Everybody just, again, in the right roles and driven, all driving towards the same common goal. Okay. Yeah.
Favourite part of your job? You've already given one answer, which is developing people. So let's have a second one.
What's favourite
second,
part of my current
second
job?
Part. Yeah, the second favourite part of your current job.
I'm not totally sure at the moment. I'm still learning it. I like dealing with the SLT. I like feeling as though I'm making a difference. You can easily suffer from imposter syndrome in this job because you can sometimes think, well, you know, that branch was doing all right before I became a regional manager and, you know, it'll probably do all right if I wasn't a regional manager. And you can start doubting yourself and thinking that you're not adding any value, but then every now and again you'll just get a little win and it might be the smallest thing, just an idea that you've put in place and then you come away and you might not go back there for a couple of weeks, but you see it in action and you see it developing and you think, yeah, I've added some value there. So it's obviously early days in this role. So to give you a favourite part, it's a difficult question because I don't know yet. But
come away and made a difference.
Yeah, feel like you've made a difference. Feel like you've, you know, supported somebody and given them a different perspective on things, and they thought, you know what, they're right. You know, it's like little things. Like, was at Manchester branch a couple of weeks ago, and Hayler was talking about car parking spaces and wanting to bring in new product lines, and we just walk the yard, simply walk in the yard, and just saying, well, you could move this here and get rid of that and move this here, and because she's in it every day, she doesn't see it, it just becomes part of what she sees every day. And just saying, I think you should do this, I think you should do that. And then went back last week and she'd done it and it looked great and she was happy. Yeah. The yard staff were happy.
We had something similar at North, which I was there yesterday, and we were racking and things.
And so you can come away then thinking, well, I've done that.
I've done fresh eyes, because they make it, I think just getting, my biggest part I've enjoyed so far is getting to know the managers a lot closer. Yep. Some people that I'd worked with or alongside, you know, for the last 5-6 years, and would see them a few times a year at managers' meetings, and had a beer with them at a managers' meeting, but actually getting to know more about them and what, you know, what drives them, and just kind of how good they are at the job. Without sounding a bit cringy, we have got some real good people.
Yeah, 100%.
And just kind of in this role, you can take time to sit back and appreciate that.
Yeah, those people. Right, that's good. Most difficult part of your job? You go first, Cam, because you're just copying his answers. If he goes first.
Early doors, it was trying to not do it all yourself, trying to not manage the branches yourself, and that was, it did take quite a while to get over that, and not trying to just dive onto the system and, you know, drive the sales yourself and things like that. And I suppose, although I said earlier, you know, it's been quite nice in a way that I've no interaction with Berry anymore, which it's been difficult, but it has been quite nice as well. But then obviously passing some customers will still speak to me on a regular basis, and it's kind of handing them over slowly, you know, you still kind of want to, because, you know, it's self-pride, isn't it? You've built them accounts up and been successful with them. So that's been quite difficult, I'll be honest. The commuting and the travel's not been, although there's been some long hours, that's not been which I initially thought would be a problem, but it's not.
Okay, Rob?
I think there's two things for me that are the most difficult for me. I think the first one we've talked about is the kind of soul working loneliness kind of thing. That's been a difficult one for me.
Yep.
Really has. You know, working from being used to working in a close-knit team for such a long time and then literally on your own. That's been one of the hardest things. And then I suppose the other difficult part is that, unfortunately, this job, you've got to deliver some bad news, and difficult decisions have got to be made now and again for the business. And it's really important that you learn to not take it personally, and you know, you're just doing your role. Mm. The bad stuff gets passed up, and generally it's going to stop with us.
Yeah.
And that's the truth.
Yeah.
So you've got to be prepared to say you're making the right decision, the reasons why you're doing it. But that's obviously a hard part.
The way I look at that one is, as long as you do it the right way, and you follow the process and do it fairly and
with empathy.
Yeah, 100%. And you explain and communicate the reasons why you're doing it while it's still difficult to do.
Yeah.
I think you can come away and think you've done it, you know.
We've both had a bit of that early on, and we knew we were going to have that early on.
Yeah.
But like you say, we, you know, I don't think either of us are, you know, nobody enjoys delivering bad news, but business needs.
It's just part of the job.
It's what we signed up for, isn't it? Okay. So.
The most crucial trait someone needs to possess in your role?
Organisation organisation's a big one. Just, I suppose, resilience, really, because like Rob was saying there, there is some tough days.
Yeah, there are.
Yeah.
And there's some days where you will come away, and I think we've both experienced it, especially early doors. You come away and think, what have I actually done? Not what have I done, you've obviously been, but what value have I added today?
Yeah.
And not beating yourself. We're not going to reinvent the world, you know, we're not going to change the world every day, are we? But just making subtle changes and just being resilient, really.
Rob?
I think empathy. I think it's really important not to forget where we came from and know that the people that we're now dealing with, we were there 6 months ago when we had a regional manager, and just to remember, you know, how difficult it is. Branch management is the difficult job. It is a tough gig. It's not easy for any branch, whether you're working in a team of 5 or a team of 25. It's not an easy job. And it's, for me, one thing I really didn't want to do is forget how difficult it is. So when you can sometimes look at a set of figures and on the face of it thinking, well, that person's doing what they need to do, but there's always a story behind it. And if you've got the right person there and they're doing the right things, you don't forget where you came from and try and support them.
I think there are three cracking things: organisation, resilience and empathy.
Mm.
I think if you live your life with those three things professionally and personally,
yeah.
you're not going to go,
yeah.
you know, you're not going to go far wrong
no.
from them. So they're very wise words. Thank you. And then my final question.
I've never read that.
What's the what wise words coming out of
Rob Baker for me. Yeah.
It was Rob mainly. You just, for, just contributed. It's the final question to you both. Best piece of advice you've ever been given?
Well, you asked me this one when we did the manager's one, and Rob's already stole it off me. The one that, you know, when Nick was saying, don't get too high when it's good, but don't get too down when it's bad. And yep. just, you know, kind of be, you know, celebrate your wins where you celebrate them, but then also, you know, if it's, when it is difficult like it is at the minute, just know it is, you know, that there is going to be an end yep. to it all. Just.
That's good.
You stole that.
Right, you better find another one then, Rob.
The best piece of advice I've been given.
Don't do the one that we were discussing.
We'll have to get Ian Williams back for that. By a video link from...
I think Spain. If you can look yourself in the mirror and say, you know what, I've done my best today. You know, that's the only advice I would give is if you go in and you try and do your best, you're going to get probably as many decisions wrong as you get right.
Yeah.
But as long as you're doing the right things and you're doing them for the right reasons and you've done an honest day's work... then you're not going to be far off success.
That's good stuff. So listen, that's it for today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you both for coming on. And this isn't easy doing anything
no,
new.
No, it. It's good.
And
yeah.
coming and doing it. I do thank you for coming. I do thank you for being honest. I've really enjoyed the conversation. And it's, you know, it's great to see you two developing from your manager's roles and stepping up into regional managers. It is a pleasure to see you both doing that. And, you know, I think you're adding a huge amount to the business, having fresh eyes on things, because I think it was you, Cam, saying that you've got to constantly evolve,
yeah.
otherwise you start falling back. So having you two in with a fresh set of eyes is really good. So thank you for joining.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, cheers for the invite.
I've enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And to you, our viewers and listeners, thanks for listening. Watch out for more episodes coming soon. Thank you very much. Bye-bye. 1, 2, 3.